This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring author, psychologist, and daily contributor, Siobhan Scott.
The trial of Adam Montgomery is underway. He, of course, facing second-degree murder charges in the death of his daughter, Harmony Montgomery. It's already turning into a contentious battle in the courtroom with the defense arguing that, you know what, this was not Adam. This was his wife at the time that had everything to do with it. And he has been sticking up for her all of this time. But he is guilty of falsifying physical evidence and abuse of a corpse. He has admitted guilt to that, simply not to the actual death of his daughter. Keep in mind, his former wife is not on trial here. It is Adam who is, in fact, on trial. But it's an interesting picture that's trying to be painted right now. Joining me, Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author. If you're a jurist on this one, you don't really have any credible witnesses to go on. One is saying this, one is saying that, and neither have any credibility whatsoever. How do you start to tackle this one and try to make heads or tails of anything?
Yeah, I think you can look at typologies of people. Adam is a hardened career criminal. History of violence, history of murdering someone, all these years in prison. I believe it was 9 years in prison. We have photos of his wife, Kayla, with bruising, severe bruising inflicted by him. Odds are that Adam was not the ideal father here. And I think if I was weighing the evidence, I mean, how can you be anyone, let alone a judge or a CPS worker, and think that this guy is going to be a safe parent or an adequate parent? I mean, it's just atrocious that Harmony was taken out of a stable foster care where she was thriving and placed with this guy who clearly had a secondary gain if it was nothing more than to get her welfare money that was being paid for her. It's just watching the testimony that I've been able to watch, it just makes me sick.
And then to continue to get the welfare money for her by not ever saying she's gone, which they clearly found a way to keep taking those checks every single month for several years.
Yeah.
I can probably believe that this was not intentional. I can understand that. I don't think anyone truly did try to kill Harmony Montgomery. Right. But when you're that strung out and you're that much gone to reality and the rest of the world, it's easy to see how this actually did go down. But when we're looking at this, and one of the most heartbreaking things of the testimony that I've seen so far was the foster home that Harmony had gone into. And it seems like a loving woman, one who, you know, really did care about her, was taking her to her medical appointments, because Harmony did have some physical needs with her eyesight and such, and was, you know, in a good place. But then Mom, suddenly, you know, she's good again, and she goes to Mom. Then she's back to the foster home. This is a system that obviously needs a lot of retooling. I think this is like the ongoing theme every week with at least one of our stories. Why this has been going on forever? We have the same problems with the system that we've always had. At some point, do we have to look at irresponsible parents, addict parents and such, and say, look, you struck out at the beginning here. Your kids are in a good place over here. It's not healthy for them to keep bouncing back and forth between your addictness and a home that somebody actually does want to take care of them. Can't we just say game over to some of these parents earlier on? Like, if you weren't ready then, you're not ready now. And even if you are ready now, how should we trust you? Why should we trust you? Because I mean, I guess more times than not, it doesn't necessarily work out in the benefit of the children. But there seems to be so many rights for people simply because they were the one who had the egg or the sperm to begin with.
Yeah. This is another, I've got all these areas I'm passionate about. This is another one I'm passionate about. And the problem is there was a poorly done study in the 1970s, right? We're going way back in time here, that indicated back in the 60s that children who were placed with biological parents did better than children that were in foster care. And again, there's so many variables here. The study has since been taken apart and criticized that it wasn't well done. It doesn't apply to current times. But the laws in the courts were adapted to support the biological parents. There is a bias legally for that. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the things that I think why CPS workers have the burnout they have, mm-hmm. because legally they are forced to try to reunify the family. Reunification of the family is the first priority. And so they come up with all these plans and you know, ways to get the parents in parenting classes, which don't work for these kind of folks.
No.
It does no good. And then they are directed by their agencies who answer to the law that you've got to try to keep getting these parents back with their families. And it's a nightmare. I used to take these cases and I was, you know, the therapist for the child mm-hmm. at the time. So I saw a lot of kids in the 90s. And one of the things that burned me out was when I was involved in one of these cases, it was clear to me, having the mother come in, that this woman should never be alone with this child. He had been severely injured by her, and it was, she did not have the capacity to parent. And I kept writing reports indicating this. Eventually, it was overruled. She got at least partial custody back, and then the child was killed. And that case gave me PTSD.
Yeah.
I mean, I dreamed of him for years, and it was just horrifying. And I stopped working with children. Yeah. And that was for my own mental preservation.
Yeah.
You know, I would work with teens, but not with little kids. There were just so many cases like that. And so, again, we need to take some action, probably. How do we change the bias of the court at this point? Mm-hmm. This is more of a legal question, so I'm not sure how to do it. But we need to update here.
Yeah.
You know, things are not going well, and it's just nightmarish.
Sick of the ads?
We opt to
start listening with no commercials now and get access to all of our episodes in advance of everyone else.
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
True Crime Today Premium Plus.
Sign up now.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
Journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.